Welcome back to the Scumbag Podcast. Season 2 is, of course, Ruminations on Online. And we have got Peter Stormare today. How are you doing, Peter? How are you?
A little gloomy down in Los Angeles. We have clouds and rain today, which makes me a little gloomy. What about you?
I'm the same way. I'm sitting under one of those giant lizard lights that they use for people with SAD. And it's not working at all, but it's not even psychosomatic, really, which is just sad, really. But you're probably one of the most honest celebrities online as far as just, I'd call it maybe weird presence. You just kind of do whatever you want, where others do either the very, they'll do the more, a mediated way. Kind of like I was talking to Vincent D'Onofrio about, they're either very mediated or very honest, but you're somewhere in the middle where you just post things you see and random videos. And is there a reason you do that, or you just enjoy doing what you want?
Yeah, I am from a very simple background, and I have no skills when it comes to social media, and I just want to spread light and humor and laughter, and I would like to spread some good music now and then to people instead of just bitching about the politics and bitching about stuff and being angry. Most people on Twitter are very angry, and I don't know how to use Instagram or Facebook. There are some other people pretending to be me, and they do an excellent job. But I do tweet now and then because it's part of my job. They nearly have it in a contract to promote a show or a movie over the tweet. But I like to post strange things I see in life, and I've seen a lot of strange things. If I can take a snap and post it on my Twitter, I do it.
So wait, so you find the weirdest stuff and post it then? Because I remember you gave me that Hello Kitty case, which I still have.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Hello Kitty, and if I find a really good telephone case, I post it. Or very strange citrus I find in my backyard, I post them because they're very rare. Wait,
do you grow stuff in your backyard?
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff in my backyard. There's no weed in my backyard.
Right. There's no weed.
No weed. Weed. Yeah, no, stay off the grass, man. I'm from Oxford. Oxford. The Oxford campus, stay off the grass. But I got a lot of citrus fruit, which I love because I eat them straight. You know, like I clean the lemon, but I eat it with the peel and everything. It's very healthy for you, but I get these alien citrus in the back, and they're very cool to look at, and they communicate with you.
I had something to fall back on if acting doesn't keep going. The economy goes nowhere. You got your citrus to handle.
Yeah, and it's going to come on Netflix pretty soon. The citrus aliens in the Stormare backyard.
Well, something I wanted to ask you about as well was, we've talked about it offline, but one of the last things that I see from Ingmar Bergman online is about you. And I'm wondering how that came about. Because I know you, well, for the listeners at home, be interested to know your history with Ingmar and just as an actor.
Yeah, I met him, you know, in my early 20s, and he took me in and under his arms. He saw something in me, which I saw as well, but no one else, I guess. But he saw something special, and he took me under his wings, and he just, like, it's like being next to Picasso in paint, and Picasso comes over and say, man, you got a talent, you're going to continue painting because he got something special. And the same with Ingmar. So I became more daring because I get this great confirmation, and working at the National Theater in Sweden, which is, you know, like any European big country has a national stage or somehow for ballet, opera, and acting. And I was on the national stage for acting where he was. So I started both acting, directing, and writing, and doing multiple things. And he just gave me a thumbs up all the time to continue. And to many other people at the National Theatre, they hated me because Bergman sort of he vouched for me all the time. But he grew up more or less. His ancestors come from the same village as my mother, and he always said my great grandfather was a priest up there where your mother were, and I'm sure he spilled some seeds in the bushes. And because we had the same nose, we had the same sort of face, and I'm sure you got some DNA that belongs to my grandfather. So
I'm part store man.
But I love that man, and we spend a lot of time together, and I became adopted, more or less. I became one of his kids. He had nine others, but I became the 10th one, and also the other kids didn't like me too much because he treated me better than others, I think. But he, of course, as being a young artist, as I'm daring to call myself, it was great to have a guy who is double my age just pointing at me saying, you're on the right track. Just follow the voice within and keep on going. Listen to a lot of people, but just heed to a few. Nearly like Polonius said, to lurches. Yeah, but in a more modern language.
Go ahead.
What did Polonius say? Give thy ear to many.
There we are. I Googled it because I'm very smart. Give every man thy ear, but few thy voice. There we go.
Yeah, there it is.
I'm going to remember that for the next episode.
It's natural. It's a very, very good. It actually means listen to a lot of people, but, you know, just take few advice for real. You can listen to them all and smile and say, you're right, but usually it's a lot of bullshit. As it is in the entertainment business, which Polonius were.
Well, yeah. And so to transition to something thematically similar, but totally different, I guess, in Swedish Dicks. So we've talked a lot about it offline as well, but I feel like Swedish Dicks is such an interesting show. And the one thing I don't know is where you actually did the research from, because it has this really interesting kind of nice guys vibe to it. It has this very pulpy feel to it. Did you do a lot of reading? Did you watch it? Did it come from other shows at all?
No, it all comes from my head. I don't have a big head, but I grew up being a very, you know, hermit and isolated myself from society. And I was living in a dream landscape my entire life. I still do to some extent. But I always had these ideas throughout my life, and I write them down. And this idea about, is many years ago, I had this idea about a Swede being a private dick, because I have a lot of friends in the stunt business and also in people that are bounty hunters and security people, and they work like private dicks. And one of my best friends told me a lot of stories, and I said, Jesus, it would be cool if a Swede were in downtown and his name was Swedish Dick. That was his name. And then he teams up with another Swedish guy, and they become the Swedish Dicks. Just a title on a billboard would cause some traffic accidents. And I just came up with the idea, and I wrote many scripts, and I still have them in my drawer. So they're all good. But then I came down to the half-hour format because I love humor. I love dark humor. So it's a little bit – Swedish Dicks is Twin Peaks. This is now very Hollywood. You know, Twin Peaks meets Monty Python. There you have Swedish Dicks. Because I grew up on Monty Python, and of course, they know what dark humor is. But they always had a glint in their eye. You could always laugh. And of course...
Well, there was this...
No, continue.
When one of the Monty Python guys died, I forget which one it was, but it was
Michael Chapman.
It's Graham Chapman.
Graham Chapman.
Yeah, when he died, they did that HBO special. I'll never forget. And they could never do this today. I 100% believe that they get so many complaints when they just knock his urn over midway through a conversation and they spend about 10 minutes cleaning it up. It is interesting just how it's So as far as the online goes and how it relates to all this as well, Swedish Dicks being a streamed show is interesting because do you want it to even be a network show, or do you believe it's inherently an online show, as it were, a streamed show?
I had a couple of other projects, and I was pitching them here up in LA during a couple of years to networks. And they're a bunch of idiots, and they don't understand anything. And they, you know, you talk to somebody, say, "This is fantastic. Yeah, call me on Monday, man. We're going to have a decision." You call them on Monday, they have left the network and work for somebody else. And I got tired of pitching and pitching and pitching. And I said to myself and the guy I'm working with, I said to him, "Why the hell are we going to these dinosaurs that are dying? They're laying down fucking dying. Why don't we go to young kids who are eager to get on streaming or to web TV? Let's do it like a web TV series or a streaming service." And this was, you know, just after the birth of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. So I have no interest in these networks. I'm working for one now, and they are dying dinosaurs. And the rules and regulations stems from the 50s, and no one understands why they can't get any talent to their shows, and they don't. And the future is like when the airplanes came, people were bitching and moaning about how beautiful the ships were, but, you know, streaming is here. That's for the future. And kids under 15, they rarely watch a TV show anymore. It is for middle-aged people, maybe in mid-Americana. They run home to see a show at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday. And I think the future belongs to the new generation. And they see a movie on a telephone, and I know an older generation bitching and say, "You can't see a movie. It should be seen on a big screen." And the young kid just turn around and look, you know, he's stumped or she's stumped and saying, "I enjoy it on my phone. And if it's boring, I turn it off after 6 minutes." It's like with music. They listen to 2-3 songs, then they don't buy a physical CD anymore. It's the future. We have to accept the future is here. But the human beings are always looking back. And I'm too curious. I see the future, and the future, that's the only path I can walk, is into the future. And start to rejecting and bitching about iPads. It's going to blind your kids, and they're going to get diseases, they get cancer. It's been there since the beginning. When the TV came, I mean, when I was a kid, we had 2 channels in Sweden. We're not allowed to watch more than 2 hours, otherwise our eyes would burn before we turned 40. But my eyes are still with me, man. It's always this bitching and moaning from the older generation to the new. But I am blessed with a kid. She's 8 years old. I mean, the skill she has on running 5 different computers at the same time, I could never do at the age of 8. They have different skills to them.
Yeah, and I feel like there is this weird... I feel that you are touching on something here as well about this kind of the boomer fear of tomorrow is definitely something you're seeing, and especially in these political arguments. You're seeing these maybe very, very young boomers or very old millennials, or just generate whatever's between the two, I forget. You're seeing them just argue the argue machine online, and now they're saying, "Oh yeah, there's texting neck, and you're gonna go blind from looking at the computer too much, and you're gonna also somehow people who work on a computer all day are fine, by the way. Don't know how. It's bad though for kids." But there is this irrational fear online that there's either, especially with streaming, there's you've got the people who are the evangelists who just think it's going to take over all TV, and there's the people who just believe it's complete trash. Nothing in the middle. And I feel that, well, that's probably going to be it. The middle group are going to be the winners, the ones that see the value in both.
Yeah, this country is too big and vast. I think it's still 50 million households are on antennas. And I have two neighbors here. They cut their DirecTV and they have 48 free channels. And then all the watches, Hulu and Netflix and Amazon. And they get 48 channels for free on an antenna. And DirecTV is bitching, you know, and Comcast and whatever. They have to accept the facts that it's a new era, it's a new dawning. And instead of embracing it and see the potential in it, they just sit down on their asses and whine, oh, it was so much better before. And it's the same in the record industry. But for 70, 80 years, they've been eating lobster tails, drinking champagne, and just robbing artists. And now all of a sudden, they don't make trillions of billions of dollars anymore. And they start bitching and accusing artists for being, you know, selfish. So I'm not an evangelist for streaming and everything, but I can see it's taking over. It's the only way the future is. It's like when cars came, or the locomotive by Stevenson in England. You can Google it. People committed suicide because they thought he was the devil when they saw the train. The devil was coming to the village, and people committed suicide. They wanted to drag him to court and sentence him to death, or at least life in prison, because he invented the locomotive. So it's just,
and then that's, I did not know that.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah, because Stevenson had a tough life for inventing the greatest machine of all time, the steam engine and the locomotive. And it revolutionized the country, and it revolutionized people's way of traveling and streaming. And, you know, it's going to revolutionize our way of looking at each other and looking at, you know, entertainment. The only problem I can see, this is a big problem for me, being on movie sets all the time. It used to be a time, even when I was younger, starting as background, as we call people who are walk-ons. They have no lines. They're in the background in a crowded bar. You need people just in the background. When I was young, I tried to get as close to somebody working for the production, or even get close to a monitor where the director was seated, or just say, hi, my name is Peter, and they looked at me and get the fuck out of here, you know. But at least I tried to communicate with an actor. They were usually nice. Today, with background, they don't even communicate with themselves. On the show I'm doing now, we have 60 every week, 60 to 70 people background. They just sit and text, and I go up to them and say, do you text each other? No. Why don't you talk to each other? Why don't you look? If you want to become a carpenter, you have to look at the carpenter, how he works. You can't get all the information from a telephone by texting on the telephone when he's showing you how to make a house. You got to look and hear. So they're being...
That was a weird thing when I... One thing I've seen on the few sets I've been on nowadays, it really is this weird, they're looking away from the process. And this is the other side of the coin, though, from it's great having this technology, but it really is, you're watching people who go to these amazing things like a film set or what have you, and they don't realize that part of the success there is actually being there, getting there and executing and actually having the ability to talk to other people. And I'm finding increasingly this is going everywhere. People will, I don't understand people who text at the table. I can understand if you have work on, but it's a weird thing where even when you make the effort to see someone and they're on their bloody phone the whole time.
Yeah, and after you get it, after you get a text, they email you or they text you again, did you get my text? Do I have to answer immediately? I love to hike too, and I have something called Runyon Canyon next to me. I can walk up the hills for a couple of hours. It used to be when I started 22 years ago, up to, you know, 8 years ago, not 7 years ago, we all said good morning, you know, and hi, how are you doing? I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. What are you up to? Blah, blah, blah. Today, 99 out of 100, I never bring my cell phone up on a hike. They're on a cell phone, they have headphones, they're out with their kids, and they have headphones, and they're texting. they're out with three dogs mm-hmm. and they're just texting. They don't want to. And this is early in the morning, man, when the sun rises and the birds are chirping and the whole universe is waking up, at least here. And I try to say good morning to people, and I sort of, I have my route, and I always bet on myself, no one's going to say good morning this morning. And sometimes it turns out, sometimes there are people who say good morning. I take that as a good sign, but it might be one out of 20 these days. It used to be 6-7 years ago, people, you know, stopped and talked and had conversation, at least said good morning, even if you never had seen that person before. It's a nice way to say good morning when you're up on a big ridge sweating your heart out. And people stopped and communicate, and now no one talks. Everybody's on a phone. And it's pretty steep. People fall and they hurt themselves, but, you know, the fucking phone, they hold it up high so it won't get hurt. That's the strange thing in this. We said the internet and everything would unite the world when it came around, you know, early 90s when we started to communicate. And I was a firm believer it would make the world a much better place. And the isolation, we could communicate over borders and see that the devil doesn't live in another country. And they could see that the devil doesn't live in our country. But the isolation, people are isolated. We have to have restrictions, you know, written in law now. You're not allowed to text while you're going on a zebra crossing or you're walking where the manholes open and construction, you can't, you know, you can't text them. But the bad thing is the isolation has become very, very, I mean, to a point where people are locked in their little tiny bubble themselves. And
you're seeing these bubbles grow with people. You're seeing people, these hate groups, or even the people who just seek out confirmation of what they already believe. So you get these, even on the left and the right, you get them. They seek out effectively their own isolation with other people. They want to isolate themselves in their own beliefs by finding people who agree with them. And it's sad because, what are you doing?
Yeah, they're too afraid to speak out loud. You know, and then we can say the only positive thing now is with a silent majority electing a Donald Trump, or we have the Brexit in England, and we have similar movement in Europe. It has shaken up the younger audience as well. And I see things here in the U.S. that I haven't seen. I've been here 30 years, and I always thought about the U.S. It's strange. It's you have picket lines and strikes, but you don't have a lot of people protesting. But the last year here, people are out in the streets. And just yesterday, people were walking out from the school for 17 minutes because of the school shooting. And that's all over the country, which was very beautiful to see and hear about. And I think it's a political awareness that is growing in this country, which has been lost for a long time. So in the middle of all this isolation, there are also a counter movement. And I think every time the pendulum goes too far to one side, you know, there's somebody there pushing it so it will go to the other side. So in all the negativity we have today about, you know, fabricated media news and all the bullshit's going on about Russia invading the U.S. again, like they did in the 50s. We have this counter-revolution by young people being part of a political movement, which I haven't seen here. You had it in the 70s, and this is the first time since the 70s people are out protesting in the streets, which is a good thing. And then Facebook is a good thing because then you can, or Twitter, you can actually say where you are and ask people to come and join.
Yeah, and I think that there's definitely something to be said as well for going back to entertainment, that it allows not just the streaming, but also the communication aspects. It allows fun things to happen, kinds of comedy, kinds of entertainment that you didn't think could actually exist.
Yeah.
To grow. I was going to ask earlier, but we got onto something way more important. But it's funny, I never think I would have seen Keanu Reeves do any kind of quasi-comedy entertainment. Again, look, something like Swedish Dicks just couldn't have existed, even about 10 years, 5 years
ago. No, it couldn't. It couldn't. And
really something.
And a lot of, you know, talent that we have had on, maybe not in the range of Keanu, but close to, they are so happy because they get to do something that they don't get to do in a typical television show or in a typical movie, because it's a lot of typecasting. And they find it very, like, nourishment for the soul to do something different, even if it's for 3-4 days, but it gives them a lot of joy and to do something else. Otherwise, our entertainment business is streamlined. You have to do the same thing over and over again. I try to screw it up. Even if I'm European, I get to do a lot of Europeans and Eastern Europeans, but every time I try to do them a little bit different. You can't just hit your mark and say a line and take your paycheck and walk away. I would feel embarrassed. Then I should start with carpentry. I'm a good carpenter too, so.
What'd you make?
I make anything. I can build a house. I can build a cabinet. I can build a table. I love to work with wood. So I pick whatever. I am sitting here with an old table that I didn't do myself, but I designed myself, and it's covered with old wood that I found, driftwood. In Japan, it's
just yeah, and I mean, on the subject of stuff that you wouldn't know unless the online existed, Nick Offerman does that as well. He has like a whole wood shop he sells online.
I haven't, I haven't started selling, but I collect a lot of wood, and I have a storage with a lot of wood, and I don't know what to do with it. But it's great to own like a 16-inch plank from upstate New York that is 8 feet long and is 2 inches thick and 15 inches wide. They don't do them anymore. And it's like 130 years old. I caress it sometimes, and I think about all the people that walked upon those planks and get in contact with them.
That rules. Yeah, it's. I've actually got this giant redwood burl sitting behind me that I use as a table.
Yeah,
that's the best. Yeah, and it's crazy though that actually the internet allows you to get this stuff as well. I just think like it used to be, you could get weird stuff from China about 10 years ago, 15 years ago with eBay. But now it's like, you just buy an old boat that someone has turned into a table or something like that. And it's kind of wonderful that people can actually do stuff like that, sell stuff like that, and have some kind of business because of the internet. It's not all people just being racist on Twitter. There's actually some value to the internet.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't stop creativity. And that's why what we're doing now, podcasts, I'm sitting in LA, you're up there in Frisco or Oakland. It's just incredible what we can do today. And I think creativity is the cradle of creativity. When you start getting creative, you can't stop. And there's too many couch potatoes in this world and in this country. And it's like they have to open the windows and doors to their soul and start acting out the creativity, because we're born with creativity in our souls and in our head. And nothing is impossible, really. It might be if you're really sick and you're very, very poor, but still, you can do things that, I mean, we have the Paralympics now. Things you weren't allowed to do for 50 years ago, they are doing now. People with one leg running 100 meters, or they skating. It's just great to see. And I think these times are filled with a lot of gloom and like the, you know, apocalyptic curse, but it's, I can't cave into those kind of dark. I call them, they don't have torches. I'm a torchbearer, and there's a lot of people on this earth that are torchbearers. We hold the light up high and inspire people to be creative. And if we just put that torch down, there's one more caving into darkness and negativity and slumping down on the couch looking at bad TV. So we need more torchbearers.
Yeah.
Torchbearers. Reunite. That's a new party.
Well, I'm wondering.
There
we go.
That's my new company or new party. I'm going to become the president, next president of the United States. I have to have like about.
Just change the rules and become president.
Yeah, I need $500 million to even start to get some votes.
You can find it.
Yeah, I have to
ask a mate. They probably got it.
I have to tap into my savings.
Just a little bit. Well, it's interesting though, because with the torchbearer and this idea of being a torchbearer, is there a reason you don't? And is it the anger thing that you don't? I don't mean this as a kind of a whammy question, but is there a reason you don't interact with people that much on, say, Twitter or even, well, I don't know if you even use Facebook, but is there a reason you don't interact online as much? Is it because of the hatred or just how angry people get for no reason?
Yeah, that's a lot of anger. That's a lot of anger, even on Twitter, that you don't answer people. They're very nasty. But also, I was born a hermit. I was born like a loner. I call it a loner, like a village fool. I'm standing in the corner of a little town, just smiling, and I have a clenched fist, and in that fist is a golden nugget that no one else can see. But it makes me happy to know I have that golden nugget, whether you can see it or not. But I've always been a loner. I don't like to mingle with other people. And I don't know why, if that's a talent or a curse. But I never go, you know, to red carpet or dinners or rap parties and all that crap. I can't stand it because it makes me nervous. I get diarrhea and I get in a bad mood. And I don't get to sleep. I need to go to bed 9 o'clock and step up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Then I feel happy. So I am a loner. I'm very grateful that I've worked in this, call it industry, for 30 years soon. And I've never been to these parties, or I've done some red carpets when it's really in my contract to do a red carpet. But if I can avoid it, I do. Because my goal is not to be in tabloids or have my photo plastered, you know, in some glossy magazine. I want to work as an actor, director, writer, producer, come up with crazy ideas and play my music, write my poems. I don't have to show the poems for anybody, but I like to do them for myself. But honestly, I am a loner. I don't want to be with other people. It's like you and I had dinner. We were three people. That's enough for me. If we're four or five, then I don't know how to behave. Either I would order, you know, either I drink just water and go home fast and I come up with white light, or I drink two bottles of wine myself and become, you know, depressed. I'm not antisocial, you know, but I am a loner. I like to be alone. I like to sit in my little studio in my garage, which is a beautiful studio, and create music, to sit 4 or 5 hours or to write. I can't be in rooms where there's a lot of people. Maybe it's also because of my profession, where you're together with actors and actresses my whole life, more or less, and everything is a lot of screaming and bitching about, you know, the shoes. There's something wrong with the shoes, and this dress makes me look fat, while the earth is, you know, pivoting and there's wars going on. And I think that's so trivial. I don't want to be part of this garbage. I try, then I walk away and I come when they say the cameras are ready.
You consider the online almost a reflection of your offline, which is very, very different to everyone else.
I call it a hermit. And I think that's why the only one in Hollywood that I sometimes can have a beer with or sit and talk with is actually Keanu. And he calls himself a hermit too. He's maybe because deep inside I'm shy, even if no one thinks so. And even Keanu is very, very shy. They've been like screaming at him because he's strange at the red carpet. He looks down. He's trying to put up an attitude by looking cool. And I know him. He's just very shy. He's shaking. It's a part of the business that some people can't handle really without getting sick, more or less. Physically sick, not mentally, but physically sick. And afterwards, you don't enjoy, even if someone comes up and said, that was fantastic, you think everybody's lying and you just want to go home. You just want to go home and continue working, because that's the satisfaction of this job, to be creative all the time if you're lucky to work all the time. It's like your body growing older and older and older, but your brain is still 16 years, and I'm curious as hell what's going to be next, what's going to happen next, what's my next gig, what am I doing next? And I have, because I always had a motto of, number one, I want to be a happy human being. Number two, it's like hopefully to work with TV and drama or, you know, acting, directing. But the most important thing for me is to be a human being and to act accordingly, to be nice to people, to say good morning, you know, address people. And that's always been the most important thing for me. And I'm telling you now in the podcast, if God came down, that I call God, that no one else knows how my God looks like. But if God came down today and said, you will not do any more acting or any more producing or anything, you will, I would clap my hands and jump for joy and say, what are we going to do, God? What are we going to do? That's awesome. Something new. And maybe God said, well, you're going to die. And I'm going to say, tell them I died as a happy person, God. That's always been my motto.
Yeah, I always wondered deep down if I would be happier if I could disconnect more. And I do wonder if all these people who are super angry all the time in person have this issue where they're just, well, I know I have it to some extent, where it's they're just angry because of the constant feed of different people's opinions. Kind of the obtuse version of that Pilates quote, just way too many voices at that point.
Yeah.
It's just an overload of not so much information, but just stuff. It transcends being useful.
Yeah, I don't know if I would survive in doing the job you're doing, because I would maybe have a baseball bat next to me and hurt some people and end up in an asylum, or I don't know. But I think we have a similar thing sometimes when you come to a threshold, when it's, you know, a production, a movie, or even TV, sometimes you hit a wall and no one knows what to do and people start screaming and bitching. And I tend to walk away, or I just open up my sluice, I call it my brain, where all the words goes in my right ear, and they just disappear in my left ear. They go out. I do what I call highlight and delete. I look at them and I say, everything you're saying now is highlighted in my brain. And when this is over, I'm just going to press delete. And that gives, you know, I smile. Or if it's too intense, I have actually the ability, which you might not have, I can just walk away. I walk away and I walk into a corner and I ask Ingmar, what the hell would you have done in this situation? And he usually answers from up above or deep down below somewhere. But I usually get an answer. But in this industry and in your profession, there's a lot of people with insecurity, and everybody's sitting with a mortgage, and they have mistresses and lovers. They have cars they want to buy. They want to have the bling bling and become rich. They want to become famous. And they have all these issues, and no one is really, really strong enough to take a decision themselves. No one dares to take a decision, because if I take this decision, it might cost me my job. And then I say, okay, It will cost you your job, but at least you were fucking honest to yourself and to the people around you. There's always other jobs to do. If you can't continue in this profession, there's tons. Open up, become a florist or something. There's something my father taught me being young and doing the transit over to the U.S., a country he loved and he worshipped. And I have the same TNT in my blood as my father. And he always said to me, what's the worst thing that can happen to you? I said, that I'll die. You're going to die anyway, son. So fuck that. I can lose my apartment. Well, if you lose your apartment, you're going to find somewhere to sleep, I'm sure. What if I'm going to sleep in the streets? Well, try to enjoy it as long as you can. Avoid drugs, avoid drinking. That's a good way. And I said, but if I have no money at all, he said, you have two good hands. You have a thumb and you have four fingers on each hand? Yeah. Use them. Use them. And then, all the fear fell off of me at a young age. And I said, what the hell am I afraid of? To lose a job? To lose an apartment? To go bankrupt? No, I don't care. I would survive one way or another because I have my two hands. As well.
And how did that lead? How did you actually get to America? I've never actually found that out.
I say, as John Lennon and I, we made a left at Greenland, and all of a sudden we were in the U.S. No, we were, we were always on the verge to immigrate over here, and my father was working a lot here, a lot of relatives over here. But I didn't make the transition over until I knew I could make the transition over. And that was pretty late in my life, late 20s, early 30s, because I worked at the national stage, as you have in England. You have your national stage, and it's very prestigious to have a good contract, and you're on a monthly salary. You can direct, you can act, you learn a lot just by looking at the super, super professional older ones. And you talk to them, you go out with them, you have a beer with them. And I spent 10 years just learning and being with Ingmar and learning. And then I got to tour a lot with Bergman's performances all over the world. I got offers from US, offers from other directors in England to come and work. And one day I said, now it's time to move. And that's like 30 years ago. 30 years plus. My first gig here, I think, was 86, and I got an agent and stuff. I still had something to do in Sweden at the National Theater with my contract. But I consider 86 being the year when I sort of took the step over here. And it's been in my body since I was 5 years old. I told my parents that I would live here in California when I get older, and probably work with music or acting. Because
are you still playing music?
Yeah,
I don't know if you ever play. Is that the next thing?
Yeah, I'm just now producing a really great Swedish girl, actually, and she was just over singing putting down her lead voice on 16 tracks, and now we're sitting producing, putting everything together. Now we're editing sort of the movie. We shot the whole movie, and now the editing process, putting together the album. So that is my sidekick. It's cheaper than going to a shrink. And it's soul food. It is a divine thing to do, to work with music and have the ability to sit in the studio for a couple of days and work with talented people. It just gives you joy. I just called the producer I'm working with the other day, and I said, we have to do this more often. Every time I leave you, I'm in a happy mood. I play some of the songs in my car. I come home, I'm smiling. Sometimes when you come home from a movie set, you're kind of so tired and stressed out that I never get in a foul mood or bad mood, really. But working with the music always makes me happy. And I'm glad it came into my life at an early age. And I still can enjoy listening to the big revelation I had when I got the Beatles' White Album. It was the first album I could buy. Me and my brother saved money for many months. And we're still debating who owns who, because that's a double album. So we collected the money, and just to listen from track 1 to track 22 just blew my mind. And still when I listen to it, it's like fantastic. It's breathtaking what those kids did in a couple of years. But music is for, and it goes hand in hand with actors. They are ridiculed sometimes because they play music and they try to perform, and they do. But it is, if you have some talent as a actor, you know, and you have to know how to sing and dance a little bit, because it's part of your profession. Because if someone asked me today to be in a musical, I can't say, no, I can't sing. Of course, I would try my best to be in the musical and to do my best, even if they said, nah, you might not be good enough to be in the musical. But you have a musical ear. I'm sure you dabble with theater. I know you have a lot of love for music. I think it comes hand in hand.
Yeah, and I feel your whole attitude is just more positive than most people in entertainment these days. It seems that there is this weird in music, in entertainment, I guess, all over the place. It's all just so dark, and it's not even the kind of thoughtful darkness I used to see in entertainment, where it was like very thoughtful and organized and careful. It was just, now it's just Trump, yeah, I hate Donald Trump, and that's why I'm depressed. Wasn't there when Reagan was in, or Nixon, or in England, John Major, Margaret Thatcher? They were not as depressed then, somehow.
No, I don't know what happened. I mean, Ronald Reagan today is supposed to be one of the best presidents we ever had. And if you go to history, and Oliver Stone's, I recommend it on Netflix, where he's My American History that he did for his kids. And Ronald Reagan, I mean, he nearly bankrupted this country. And it's today, because there's an old saying in the country where I grew up, when the devil becomes an old man, they treat him like a priest. With reverence. And it's the same here. And of course, people can be angry at Donald Trump, but they take it as an excuse. I tell my liberal friends, well, sometimes the silent majority, you live in a country where people can vote. And, 2.5 years from now, you can vote again and you can vote him out. But 47% of the registered Democrats never voted because they thought it was a slam dunk. They never got out of the couch. And I said, because they calling them, even Hillary Clinton called them like trailer trash, knuckle draggers, you know, homophobic idiots that can't, but they're smart enough to go to cast the vote and fill in those stupid ballots they have here that are impossible to encrypt. But at least they got there and got the names right. And you had this similar thing in England with Brexit, where everybody was laughing and slapping their knees, you know, and aristocracy was laughing and slapping their knees and, you know, this will never happen. Then they woke up like, and now I'm sure they're going to have a second referendum where the Brexit will never happen. So it's, I think the entertainment, I'm happy. I'm trying to be a torchbearer, and there is a lot of gloom, but as I said before, when the pendulum, that's why you have Grand Canyon in the USA. It doesn't exist anywhere else because the pendulum has a big swing here. It's large, it's huge. But when it's on the gloomy, gloomy, gloomy side, there's going to be a couple of us just taking the pendulum and swing it back into the light. And that's how it goes. The more garbage there is on TV, the more great things going to be done online and streaming, independent movies, people putting up their own credit cards and a little house or whatever to do a movie for $600,000 or three billboards, you know, just to make something, a small little movie. And all of a sudden, it's, wow, people saw it and it changed people's lives. And we still have that ability. But in the big scam,
I think that's,
man, I'm talking a lot.
I think that's... No, it's good. I was going to say, that's actually a lovely point to wrap it up, because I think that we've kind of got to... We've gone in a different direction than I expected, where it's about positive.
To shut up sometimes. You're the director,
No, absolutely not. But that is it from us. Thank you for coming on, Peter. Really appreciate your time.
Miss you.
It's wonderful.
But keep up the torch and remember to highlight and delete when they start bitching in that room. Just smile and let it go in through your right ear and out your left. And you can play it on high speed too. It sounds even funnier.